Hi there and welcome back to the shortest history of Britain. The transition, the change, the growth, the development from where we were as a nation just a century before was massive. It was a hugely important period of economical, social, political, and cultural change. As we move into the 1600s, that change continues through what would be known as the English Renaissance and pave the way for the 18th century to follow. So let's get started. When we moved into the 1600s, Queen Elizabeth I was at the throne of England and James VI on the throne of Scotland. Despite this growth in many areas of British life, times were falling hard on the people of the land. English conflict with Spain and Ireland was taking its toll, and the taxes were growing to fund the wars. Years of bad weather had resulted in bad harvests, prices rose, and the standard of living for the people was dropping. The art scene was flourishing, though this was in little part due to the actions of the Queen, as she bore no interest in such things beyond the occasional. And as we moved into 1602, Queen Elizabeth's health began to fade, and it became apparent that a search to secure her successor must be started, despite the fact that Elizabeth never named her successor to the throne. Her advisor, Robert Cecil, began to enter into a secret, coded negotiation with James VI of Scotland, advising him to play for time, to act calm, and to charm the Queen, and he so did, and on the 25th of March 1603, Queen Elizabeth died. Her body was sailed downriver on the Thames on a torch-lit barge, and she was buried in Westminster Abbey alongside her half-sister, Mary I. On the 25th of July, James of Scotland reached London to a surprisingly amicable greeting. His arrival was expected by many to take the form of an invasion of sorts, but he was warmly greeted and he was crowned King James I of England, despite being, of course, James VI of Scotland. James kept many of the councillors employed by his predecessor and set about solidifying the union between the crowns of Scotland and England and their other territories. He wanted to form them into a single country with a single monarch, a single parliament, and a single law. His idea was met with condemnation on both sides of the border. James wanted to be known as King of Great Britain, but Sir Francis Bacon advised him that the title would not be recognised formally in England and couldn't appear on any of the formal documents. In Scotland, however, James forced the Scottish Parliament to adopt this, and the title of King of Great Britain was indeed adopted on legal documents, statutes, and their coins too. In 1605, a dissident Catholic was discovered in the basement of Parliament on the night of the 4th of November going into the 5th. His name was Guy Fawkes, and on the eve of the state opening of Parliament, he stood guard of 36 barrels of gunpowder with the intention of causing the destruction of not only the king, his family and his government, but the grand houses of Parliament also. The following January, at the first sitting of Parliament since the foiling of this plot, the observance of the 5th of November Act was passed, calling for an annual public thanksgiving for the failure of the gunpowder plot. Its celebration lasts through to this day, of course, as Bonfire Night. The British overseas explorations had begun to take their first shape too. In 1607, the first permanent settlement on what would become the United States of America was established at Jamestown in Virginia. And whilst the fight for control of that land would go on for over 100 years or more, with the likes of Spain, France, the Netherlands all putting forth their claims, the seeds were sown for a new and more expansive hold on overseas territories. Despite many of the first inhabitants of Jamestown dying fairly quickly after arriving, a group of Protestants who'd been persecuted into hiding in Holland for the previous few years set sail once more for the New World. Their ship was named the Mayflower, and in 1620 they landed at Plymouth Rock in what would become Massachusetts. In 1611, the first publishing of a new English translation of the Christian Bible for the Church of England took place, including the 39 books of the Old Testament and the 27 books of the New Testament. This version, which will be described as one of the most important books of the English language of any time, was, and still is, referred to as the King James Version of the Bible. James was keen to maintain the peace with the Kingdom of Spain, even suggesting a marriage between the Prince of Wales and Anna Maria of Spain, who would go on to be Holy Roman Empress through a marriage to Ferdinand III. In 1617, Sir Walter Raleigh, who'd been imprisoned just after the ascension of James to the throne on charges of treason, was pardoned and released from prison. He embarked on a voyage to Venezuela and to South America on a hunt for the fabled El Dorado, the lost city of gold. Now, as I mentioned in the previous episode, the Caribbean Sea, the Mexican Gulf, and the coasts of South America were swarming with Spanish ships. And the implicit instruction to Walter Raleigh was to go about this voyage without engaging the Spanish in any battle, however small. However, a detachment of Raleigh's men laid siege to a Spanish outpost, and in the battle, Raleigh's son was shot and killed, and Raleigh had to return home to the king with the news. Count Gondomar, who was the Spanish ambassador to England at the time, was furious and requested James to reinstate Raleigh's imprisonment and called for the death penalty. King James had little choice but to agree, and Raleigh was beheaded in the old palace yard in Westminster. By 1624, the king was growing increasingly ill, suffering from frequent fainting fits and arthritis, gout. He lost his teeth, and he began to drink heavily throughout the day. He died in March of 1625 and was buried in Westminster Abbey. He was greatly mourned. The country had enjoyed a long period of relative peace under his rulership, but it also created frictions, and in his later years, Charles, who was the Prince of Wales, had begun to muster support for his own claim to the throne. So when James passed, Charles was crowned King Charles I of England, Scotland, and Ireland. Charles was almost immediately at war with his own parliament, and in 1629, when Charles tried to order a parliamentary adjournment, the MPs held the speaker to his chair until the matter at hand had been discussed. Now, Charles was furious at this. He had the men imprisoned and dissolved parliament entirely, and for the next 11 years, he would rule the nation without a parliament, in a period that would be known as the 11-year tyranny. However, even with all the king's powers, the royal prerogative, only Parliament could raise and collect taxes, and soon a deficit grew, and something needed to be done to raise funds for the royal purse and to fund overseas wars. So Charles set about collecting taxes such as that known as ship money, which was ordinarily only collected through times of war, during peacetime, and it proved hugely lucrative, though hugely unpopular, as you can imagine. He also set about reclaiming any gifts of land that had been given by the crown, especially in Scotland. He reimposed the largest of boundaries around the national forests, using the newly enforced borders to penalise and therefore fine trespassers. Regardless, by the 1640s, Charles was bankrupt. Any loans and grants were refused by the City of London and also by various overseas allies too. Charles even went as far as to take £130,000 worth of silver bullion from the Royal Mint, promising to pay it back later. Now, this growing unrest and a similar situation in Scotland led Charles to believe that a rebellion was forming against his authority. The unrest in Scotland led eventually to the Bishops' Wars, the first conflict of a wider war which is known collectively as the Wars of the Three Kingdoms. The Scottish and English battled once again, resulting in the Scottish occupation of Newcastle and Durham, and the area remained under Scottish control even after the first peace agreement was reached. The demands of the rebels fell largely onto the single issue, the lack of a parliament, and so it resulted in 1640 with Charles calling what would go on to be known as the Long Parliament, so named as one of the stipulations of its formation was that it could only be dissolved with the agreement of its members, who didn't agree to do so for more than 20 years. The Wars of the Three Kingdoms reached their next pivotal stage in 1642 with the beginning of the English Civil War. Charles's conflicts with the Parliament in issues from the running of government to the persistent issue of religious freedom caused a rift between the two sides. On one side, we had the parliamentarians, who were known as the Roundheads, a term of derision at the time, and one which was indeed punishable for even saying. And on the other hand, we had the Royalists, who were known as the Cavaliers. Whereas previous civil wars in England had been fought over rulership, who should be in charge of the land or sitting on the throne, this war was different, in that it was concerned with how the kingdom should be governed. The first real battle of the war played out at Edge Hill in what is now Warwickshire. Both sides hoped that a victory there would end the war in their favour swiftly, but the armies were made of very inexperienced soldiers, and despite both sides losing massive amounts of casualties, neither side could claim victory, and the war would end up going on for four more years. In 1644, the King's Cavaliers were victorious at the Battle of Cotbrady Bridge, but only a few days later it was the Roundheads who won the day at the Battle of Marston Moor, and this way the war continued until in 1647 King Charles ended up in the hands of the Parliamentarians, who placed him under house arrest at Holdenby House in Northamptonshire and eventually on to Windsor Castle. Charles was accused of treason against the country for using or abusing his power to pursue personal interests over the good of the country, and he faced trial. The government removed the notion of any sort of sovereign immunity that Charles was trying to plead, and on the 26th of January 1649 found him guilty and condemned him to death. On the 30th of January, Charles I was beheaded outside the Palace of Whitehall. His execution was delayed by a few hours in order to allow the House of Commons to pass an emergency bill which gave the House the power to govern the country in place of a king, thus abolishing the monarchy and turning the country into a republic which was known as the Commonwealth of England. The Scots, however, named Charles's son, also Charles, the King of Scotland, and he was crowned Charles II of Scotland. That same year, Parliament signed its permission for the English army to invade Ireland, and a young Oliver Cromwell was given the command. On his return, the land which had been unified under one king, under Charles I, were now divided again back under two different rulers. Cromwell had fought in the Civil War alongside many Scottish men, and he saw no need initially to go to war. He begged them to turn away from Charles II, but when his requests were turned down, he saw no other solution but to declare war once more. Whilst the English were ultimately victorious, the fallout was minor, and Scotland was left to largely operate as it chose, albeit technically back under English control. In 1653, the Parliament elected Cromwell to the role of Lord Protector and ruler of the Commonwealth of Countries, England and Wales, Scotland, Ireland, and all of its overseas territories as a new republic. The First Anglo-Dutch War had already begun, and once he'd secured peace, he set out to war against the Spanish, intent on attacking and capturing their colonies in the Caribbean. The raids and battles, many at sea of course, culminated in the invasion of Jamaica, which then became an English colony. In 1657, the Parliament revised their constitution and offered Cromwell the crown, placing him in quite a difficult position. He'd been so instrumental in the dissolving of the monarchy, and he felt it God's will that he turned down the opportunity, instead remaining as Lord Protector. The following year, he was struck down with malaria and died that same year in September. The night he died, a great storm swept the entire continent, and his son Richard took the mantle. The power of the Protectorate was reliant on the might of the army, and Richard had no military experience whatsoever. The army were forced to resign early the following year, and with huge debts of as much as £2 million to their name, the Protectorate was also dissolved, and Richard Cromwell stood down without incident. his brief stint as Lord Protector of the Commonwealth was featureless, and his quick downfall was celebrated by the Royalists, who quickly gave him the nickname Tumbledown Dick. The Council of State took the control of the country until the entire concept of a parliament-run state itself was abolished in 1660. The lack of a military worried those in power, concerned that the country was fragile and may well descend into anarchy, and an agreement was reached to recall Charles II, who'd been exiled in France during this entire period. He returned to the land and took the crown, restoring the line of the House of Stuart. This period between Charles I and Charles II is known as the interregnum, or it's known as an interregnum. There are indeed other examples of it through history. And the return of Charles II began the period that we know of as the Restoration. A young politician named Samuel Pepys kept a very detailed diary, and this Diary of Samuel Pepys, as we know, is still referred to as one of the best accounts of this decade or so of time through the Restoration to the 1670s. However, in 1665, Charles II faced a huge crisis. An epidemic of huge proportions, the Great Plague of London killed 7,000 people a week at its peak, and once it was done, it had taken the lives of over a quarter of the population of London. The king had fled the city, and when he returned, he set about picking up the pieces, only to be met with a second crisis the following year. At a small bakehouse on Pudding Lane in London, a fire broke out early one morning. A strong wind through the city stoked the flames, and within no time the city was ablaze. The firefighting methods of the time were delayed due to the indecisiveness of the Lord Mayor, and within a few days it had burned over 13,000 homes and 87 churches, including the great St. Paul's Cathedral. Charles II was a man who liked to enjoy himself, perhaps more than he enjoyed the running of the country. Despite this, however, he was involved in societies of science and mathematics, and he signed a royal charter to establish the Royal Society of London for Improving Natural Knowledge, a group of academics who met in what is now the oldest scientific institution in the world. Included in their group were Robert Boyle and Robert Hooke and Sir Christopher Wren, all of whom assisted in the planning and rebuilding of London after the Great Fire. In 1673, he established the Mathematics School at Christ's Hospital Boarding School, and 2 years later the Royal Observatory at Greenwich, the site for which was also chosen by Sir Christopher Wren. As Charles aged, a problem arose, as his brother James was next in line to the throne, but was of Catholic faith, and it was greatly opposed by many of his people. The House of Commons passed the Exclusion Bill, which sought to rule James out of succession. The Parliament fell into two camps, those who opposed the bill named the Tories, and those in favour named the Whigs, and those terms would continue somewhat to this day as the left and right sides of British politics. Charles died of apoplexy in 1685 and converted to Catholicism on his deathbed, though asking his aides to take care of his many mistresses as well as his wife. The exclusion of James did not stand, and James took the crown as King James II of England and Ireland and King James VII of Scotland, though he wasn't officially crowned in Scotland, where rebellions were brewing to overthrow the new assumed king. James was a Catholic, but whilst his two daughters, both in line for the throne, were Protestant, those who opposed this saw no long-term risks of a return to Catholicism for the country at large. But when the king had a son, they saw the need to act to prevent the Catholic faith from continuing on for years to come. They invited William of Orange, James's nephew and also his son-in-law and ruler of much of the Dutch Republic, to cross to England with an army with the intention of overthrowing the king. James's army was superior in number and force, but when the Dutch army landed, a number of the king's men swapped their allegiance to the Dutch, including James's own daughter, Mary. The king lost his nerve, despite having the advantage, and he fled, throwing the royal seal into the River Thames. The Parliament ruled that such actions were deemed as abdication of his throne, and it was thus vacant for the taking. William of Orange took the throne alongside his wife and cousin Mary, who in 1689 were crowned William III and Mary II. This caused the beginnings of the war in Ireland, where the Protestants and Catholics would wage full warfare on each other, supported by their counterparts from the neighbouring lands of Scotland and Denmark and France and the Netherlands too. And this, of course, is a conflict that still exists in a form even today, especially in Northern Ireland and also to a lesser extent in Scotland also. The deposed King James led his armies against the Protestant supporters of William and Mary and continued with massive bloodshed until the Battle of the Boyne in 1690 and the Battle of Aghrim in 1691, after which the Treaty of Limerick was signed to bring an end to the war. Though the war in Ireland formed only one piece of the greater 9 Years' War, a continent-wide conflict between the forces of Britain and the Dutch Republic, along with the Roman Empire, against the Kingdom of France and a raging King Louis XIV, the longest ruling monarch of any country in history and a record that stands to this day at over 72 years. The 9 Years' War included this war in Ireland, as well as the conflicts of the Jacobite uprising in Scotland, and also the conflicts in the newly colonised lands of America between the New England and the New France forces, along with their respective native allies of that land. Mary died in 1694, leaving William as the sole monarch of the kingdom. Without any children, and with William's own death on the horizon, attention turned to his own succession on the throne, and an uncertain end to the 17th century. Next time, we move steadily closer to the modern day as we step into the 1700s. The Acts of the Union brought together the lands of Britain, and we move into what is known as the Georgian era. Britain gets its first Prime Minister, its navy pushes around the world and makes landfall in Australia and New Zealand, and we build the first canal systems as the Industrial Revolution begins, changing everything.